My guest at this time is Michael Ferris. He's the co-founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and a fierce defender of religious liberty. In fact, he is the author of the new book, The History of Religious Liberty. Of course, the book comes just days after the Supreme Court declared a constitutional right to gay marriage, and debates, of course, are already raging over the rights of Christian business owners and what the tax-exempt status should be for religious institutions like schools, universities, charities, and even churches. Mr. Ferris joins us now to discuss what's ahead for us and what our heritage teaches us. And Mike, thanks very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's first of all talk about where this debate is headed just really days after the Supreme Court's ruling on the definition of marriage. It was over the weekend, I believe, on MSNBC that Wisconsin Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin had this to say about her more narrow understanding of religious freedom in America. Here's what she said.
Certainly, the First Amendment says that in institutions of faith that there is absolute power to, to observe religious, deeply held religious beliefs. But I don't think it extends far beyond that. We've certainly seen the same set of arguments play out in issues such as access to contraception. Should it be the individual pharmacist whose religious beliefs guides whether a prescription is filled? Or in this context, they're talking about expanding this far beyond our churches and synagogues to businesses and individuals across this country. I think there are clear limits that have been set in other contexts, and that we ought to abide by those in this new context across America.
So a United States senator who swore an oath on the Constitution effectively saying individuals and business owners don't have religious liberty. What do you make of that?
The ignorance of members of Congress and the U.S. Senate never ceases to baffle me. How did they get there in the first place without taking a basic civics course? Or maybe they have, and they just don't believe it. The First Amendment doesn't talk about the freedom of belief. It talks about the free exercise of religion. And it's not an institutional right alone. It is an institutional right. Churches have religious freedom. But it's primarily an individual right. And the Supreme Court, back in the day when it used to think straight, would say things like, it's not up to the government or the courts to determine which individual within a faith has correctly understood the demands of that faith. You're allowed to go your own way individually and believe what you want to believe as an individual. So, this senator has just simply walked away from not only the text of the Constitution, the meaning of the Constitution, but our great American traditions.
We've obviously seen some state leaders in the wake of this decision try to protect religious liberty. Governor Abbott in Texas, most recently Governor Brownback in Kansas. I think Governor Jindal in Louisiana either has or is planning to do something similar. Do you believe that those will be effective protections for people in their states, or ultimately will this end up in the federal judicial system and end up in a decision like we saw a couple weeks ago?
Well, we need to remember that religious liberty can be attacked by government at any level, the local governments, the state governments, and the federal government. And when a governor like Bobby Jindal or Sam Brownback do the right thing and say, our state government isn't going to do that to you, that's a good thing. That limits the areas where a church or a school can expect an attack. But a Christian college residing in one of those states can still expect attack from the IRS or from the accrediting associations or from the U.S. Department of Education if they don't go along with the federal edicts on this. So it limits the battle, but it doesn't prohibit all forms of attack upon religious liberty.
We're talking with Michael Ferris. He's the author of The History of Religious Liberty. We'll get to the book in just a moment. Sir, the last time you and I spoke, it was specifically about your concern about what a Supreme Court decision like the one we finally got would do to the tax-exempt status of Christian schools, universities, and so forth. You were concerned about it at the time because of the comments of the Solicitor General, Donald Verrilli, at the oral arguments in the marriage case, where he said it will be an issue if the court ruled his way, which it now has. So just how concerned are you about this going forward?
Well, that discussion between Donald Verrilli and Justice Alito spilled over into the written opinions. And so when you have four justices on the Supreme Court, effectively warning all the religious institutions, you better do something about this because trouble's coming. I don't think that that's an idle speculation. That's about as strong of a warning from as about a high as source as you can possibly get. And so I think that we're in for a real fight. That's the bad news. The good news is we will fight. And if the other side on this battle thinks that this is all over just because they won this particular skirmish, a very important skirmish to be sure, but it is not over. And the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that I helped to write will play a role in stopping the federal government from coming any further than they should be. Will it be decisive? Well, that's partly up to the Supreme Court of the United States. And, you know, again, that's kind of going to be up to Justice Kennedy one more time. You know, will he flip-flop? Which way will he go? I for one, am tired of having one justice on the Supreme Court deciding so many important issues of this country, and I think it's time that we do something about the Supreme Court itself.
We're talking with Michael Ferris. Again, the book is The History of Religious Liberty, and let's talk about that because, Michael, you paint a history in this book that I think a lot of people are unaware of. Until some of the recent debates, I would probably argue that a majority of Americans haven't thought that deeply about the issue and just have assumed, well, that's always been part of America, and it was just made sense to our founders. It was probably never even that big of a debate, but it was a huge debate. You had different denominations oppressing one another for years, and it was not at all a given based on history in Europe and even in the early part of the colonies that our federal constitution would come up with the freedoms and liberties that are ultimately enshrined in the First Amendment. So just how tough was that to achieve?
It was a monumental battle. It was the common people who believed in Jesus, who believed that the Bible was the authority for their faith and their life, that really fought the war and won. And they, you know, many of them paid with their lives. And so the attacks continued a long, long time. And in Virginia, where I live, in Loudoun County, Virginia, there were attacks by the Anglican church hierarchy, aided by the government of Virginia, in the 1770s. It went that long. The battle for religious liberty wasn't settled on the Mayflower. There was 150 years of great struggle, and it was a very courageous group of people. What people are taught in virtually every institution of learning, any place else you look, you'll be taught that the Enlightenment was the source of our desire for religious liberty. It's simply not true. I mean, I lay out the historical evidence in great detail, but one Harvard historian from around the 1920s said that the evidence that people that are indifferent to religion, that basically is the Enlightenment crowd, were the cause of religious liberty is an unsustainable argument. There simply is no evidence for that point. It was people who cared very deeply, but it was grassroots kinds of Christians fighting establishment kinds of Christians that gave us religious liberty for everybody.
How revolutionary of a concept was it at the time globally, and how did our religious liberty help to perhaps grease the skids for millions of other people in other countries?
Well, we were the first place in the world that religious liberty was declared to be an inalienable right on a national level. It was an absolutely foreign concept. Before that, the widespread belief was that the religion of the leader of the country dictated the religion of all the citizens. And that never really changed in Britain until after it got established in the American colonies, toward the very end of our colonial period in some of the colonies, and into the constitutional period in some of the other colonies. So in early America was the first place. The Virginia Declaration of Rights in 1776 was the first declaration of religious liberty in a constitutional document in the world ever, and so the fight that mattered was from here, and it was from religious liberty that we got freedom of speech, that we got freedom of the press, that we got freedom of assembly, petition for redress of grievances. Every single one of those freedoms was derived and found to be necessary in the battle to both publish the Bible so that the common people could get the Bible, and in the ability to have and practice religious liberty to believe what you wanted to believe, and the government couldn't direct you to believe their orthodoxy. And it spread throughout the world. Wherever religious freedom is practiced in the world today, it derives from those Virginia Baptists, those Mennonites, the Amish, the Quakers, and the others in the various other colonies, the people that stood faithfully for religious liberty over time.
It's been said by others who certainly share your regard for religious liberty that that was the big difference between the American Revolution and the French Revolution. There were certainly some concepts in common, but ultimately what made the American Revolution turn into a constitutional government in a peaceful, ordered way that preserved and expanded liberty as opposed to the bloodbath that eventually unfolded in France was the priority placed on religious liberty. Is that what your research shows as well?
Yes, especially if you add one other concept to it, and that is the Christian worldview about the nature of man. France believed that man was perfectible and that we could create our own utopia, whereas the American Revolution followed the Christian biblical idea that all men are sinners, and that's why you need limited government, because you cannot trust any man in government to rule faithfully forever, because men are sinners. And so that the view of the nature of man derived from the Word of God plus the battle for religious liberty were the two things that differentiated the American Revolution from the French Revolution and made all the difference in history.
Michael, last topic, and you referred to it at the beginning of our discussion here about the book, and that's that regular people in the colonies who loved Jesus eventually forced more powerful figures to enshrine religious liberty into the Constitution. There's obviously millions, I would imagine, of people in the United States right now worried that that freedom is being eroded and being eroded by the government. But when they see the power, scope, and reach of the government, whether it's the IRS, other regulatory agencies that can make people's lives miserable, they wonder what can truly be done. What did you learn through history? What are you seeing now that might give them some encouragement?
Common people armed with bravery and faith in God can turn anything around. And, you know, I've seen it in my own life through the homeschooling movement. We were outnumbered and outgunned by the teachers' union day after day after day, but we won battle after battle after battle because common people armed with the Constitution of the United States and belief in the Word of God, we won time and again.
Mike, congratulations on the book. Thank you very much for your time with us today.
Thank you.
Michael Ferris is the co-founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. His new book is The History of Religious Liberty. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.